I would like to introduce our moderator for this case, Janice DiPietro. Exceptional Leaders International is a team of C-level executives dedicated to guiding clients, many of whom are family-controlled or closely held businesses, through critical periods of transitions, performance improvements, ownership, leadership changes. Janice is the founder and CEO of Exceptional Leaders International. She also has experience serving on boards of directors of private companies, including New Deal, Green PC, Intellisys, and Alteryx. Presently, she also serves as advisor to the board of several family and closely held businesses in the manufacturing and professional services sector. Janice serves as treasurer and chair of the Strategic Planning Committee of the Board of Directors of the Girl Scouts of Southeastern New England. Her previous roles include president of a human capital consulting firm serving Fortune 500 organizations and leading private equity firms. She was CEO of several technology, life science, and business service organizations, including doing a stint in consulting with a Big Four CPA firm. Janice holds an MBA and doctoral degree from Boston University. She graduated summa cum laude from Bentley University with a BS in accounting. So, for purposes of this discussion, you are one of the three independent board members of this company. Janice also is one of the independent board members, and so you are here to discuss what are we as the independent board members going to be recommending to the family.
Great. Thanks, everyone. Why don't we get the meeting underway? There's a number of issues kind of on the table that I think we should probably spend a little bit of time discussing tonight. One of them is really around the family's perspective around growth. So as you may recall in our last board meeting, when we addressed where we were from a performance standpoint, there appeared to be some real differences among our colleagues on the board representing the family. One feeling that since distributions over the last several years had continually been on the increase, that growth was just fine as it remained in its single digits. The other member of the board, family member of the board, really feeling that that was insufficient and that more could be done. And they're really looking to us to provide some additional guidance on how to be thinking about growth and how we might want to think about the differing views of the family members. So what are your thoughts? How would you think about the question around the differing perspectives around the growth of the business?
It seems to me before we get into the personalities and the differing perspectives on growth, we should also talk about our role in de-risking the business that the company has. So one of the points we've discussed in prior board meetings is that there's a high concentration among our top 10 customers. In fact, we understand that one customer in particular is a substantial chunk. So I'd like to suggest that we get some specific information on how much of our revenue, how much of our net profit, and how much of our percentage of sales come from this particular customer, and perhaps ancillary customers that could be grouped together, and then start to that de-risking exercise into our discussion of growth.
Mm-hmm. I'm worried about the auto industry over the next 5 to 10 years. And things are happening fairly quickly with the focus towards electrification and some other major changes. And we may be at peak auto sales the last year or two. The U.S. is certainly starting to flatten out. China is flattening out as well. So if our play is predominantly in the auto industry.
Aerospace, sorry.
It says automotive.
Oh, did I change it to automotive? Sorry. Okay. Sorry. Sorry. So you now know where my real client is. Sorry. Sorry.
So
thank you.
That we're talking about the auto industry. I'm worried about
correct.
The what the potential is, are we going to end up in flat decline mode, in which case growth, getting to single digits, is going to be tough, and generating the kind of profit that the family wants is going to be even tougher.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a concern that I have. And is there an opportunity to diversify into aerospace or some other industry that would give us an opportunity to mitigate some of that mid to long-term growth risk?
So, you know, we've had these conversations with the family in previous meetings. So we've presented the data, if you remember, from a few meetings back, where the heavy concentration and really, if we add kind of ancillary companies, which was suggested, we're in the 75 to 80% concentration with one kind of major customer. So, you know, that's, I'm coming back to you because we've had that conversation, and yet the family's perspective has remained this kind of divided, be happy with the distributions that we've had over the years, everything's fine. And Kenny, they remember, is that board member's spouse who's the president of the company and is kind of leading the charge. And then the other who's really pushing for growth. So absolutely, in terms of the potential within the industry, the sector, and then the very, very heavy concentration. So what should we do? Ellen, what do you think, what are the further ways can we engage the board, do you feel?
I think what we've done is we've done pieces, and I want to come back to the point I think being made by my mm-hmm. two fellow instinct directors, because I think it's a very important point. We've done individual pieces of looking at sales and where we are and how our makeup is, but we've never looked holistically across where we're going from a strategy. And when you look at not only the existing market but ancillary markets, mm-hmm. where we could take the products and go out, we've always looked individually at the existing, but we've never taken it and said, how do we really grow this company, and what are the different elements, and what are the pluses and minuses? Coming back to Ron's point,
yep.
I mean, you referred to de-risking, I refer to it as either offsettings, challenges in growth in automotive, or growing other areas so that you have a more holistic chance of growing the company. And I think you almost have to do that before you engage with the family, because we need to understand more about where our options are going forward.
Other comments?
Yeah. I want to build on the said, especially by Robert. I think the struggle we have is to convince the family to look into it. That's what I get. So I think we all agree as board member that we should do something about it. But how do we convince them? And maybe an idea is the winter is coming. Let's take a parallel to something that is unarguable, which is the global economy of the U.S., for example. And if you look at the history, the last 50 or 100 years, it goes in cycles. Always. It goes up, it blows up, go down, and then it goes up again. And it's inevitable. It will happen. It's not when, it will happen. It's not if, it's when. And so maybe to make this parallel with them and say, okay, so the winter is coming in your business. What's going to happen? How are you going to handle that? Because it's when you are in good shape that you can have the time and the energy and the money to think about the strategy. Not when you are in the middle of it. When you're in the middle of it, you start thinking about it, you die.
Mm-hmm.
You just disappear, and you can find many companies. So that would be my suggestion,
yeah.
to approach, but to try to convince them to look at it at least.
So when we had our strategic planning offsite earlier in the year, we talked through the market, kind of the economic conditions. I thought the management team and our input on that was quite effective in kind of suggesting that we had a lot of both risk factors and potential missed opportunities coming our way. I think sitting here as independents, we're in an interesting quandary because the two sides of the family kind of took that information and processed it a little bit differently. So fundamentally, I think one of our challenges as independents is in working through with the family members. And this is just one of several issues on the table. So what might we do? Because I think we also need to talk about where we are from a succession planning standpoint, and we need to talk about what's happening with the next gens. But each of those kind of flow from a little bit of the same issue, which is very differing kind of points of view. So
remind us, please, the family members who feel that a 75% concentration with one customer is just fine, thank you very much. Are they the same members who feel that succession planning can wait?
Yes. Yes.
And they are one job.
Was something that made me ask that question.
That's right. So we're actually getting at a kind of common thread here, I think, correct? Which is the family that feels that the performance in, again, really very healthy growth, very healthy profitability, but severe concentration in risk, that's fine. Also feels that succession planning can wait, and that next-gen development is comprised of moving their sons department to department every few weeks, that's all okay. And they are that side of the family that is in the president's role. The CEO has never been named because of the death of that individual.
I'm just wondering to what extent the fact that Gary,
mm-hmm, correct,
does not have the title of CEO,
correct,
and is president, does that present a major challenge in terms of trying to figure out whether you're sort of diversified or whatever it may be? Is that a big hang-up in that he doesn't have the title, so if you don't have the title, you don't really have the power or perhaps the appetite to go down different roads?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think really what we have in Gary is less the issue of the title and more that he's incredibly risk adverse in virtually all aspects of his life and always has been. And so, his belief in that diversification is risky. So it's a great way in which you can have a conversation with him in terms of his around risk, but because it's what he knows, he kind of goes there as part of his comfort. So I think it's not the title. It's interesting, the office remains empty that was the CEO's. It kind of remains a bit of a shrine to the former CEO. But good question. It's not in my conversations with him. I'd say it's not that. It's more his risk profile.
So I'm thinking that we haven't clearly defined the problem that we're looking to solve. We throw out terms like, we should grow, and the other side says, no, we're fine, we're growing, look at the dividends. Yet that's not really the core issue. And so I think unless we can all align on what is the core problem we're seeking to solve and why, then it's going to be very, very hard to bring the two sides together. And I think if you could articulate the downside of not doing something, so start with the working hypothesis. The working hypothesis is we need to de-risk the business. Well, why is that? Here's XYZ, PD&Q that could negatively affect us. And who in their right mind would ever look at that and say, well, why wouldn't we want to consider that and say, what should we maybe do differently? And I think that will bring us together as a board, independent or otherwise, to better clearly articulate the approach forward based upon having a clear definition of the problem looking solved. Because I think we still amongst ourselves do talking back and forth around, well, we need growth. We need diversification, or we need, to what end and to what purpose? And I think if we can do a better job at defining that, then we can determine, well, is growth needed, and if so, why?
Yep. I think that's a great point. Kevin?
I think I have a similar thought. I would have said it in maybe some different words, in that there, it feels to me like there has to be a kind of a common scenario planning exercise, right? And perhaps one of them is, as a group, we can test the believability of each of those. Is a steady no growth, just like it is for the next 50 years? Is that, what assumptions is that based on, and how do we feel about the risk of those? And is a 10% growth, or another one, or a crash in the market because of something, and use that as a way to surface in a productive way, in a structured way, the assumptions and the fears that will lurk beneath all of this. Because the people are saying invest, be more aggressive, grow more quickly. No, let's be conservative. That's the onion that wants to be peeled, right? There are these assumptions beneath that that aren't stated here, but no doubt they're in people's minds or inside conversations, and I think we have to get them out in a structured way that everyone can examine and rationally assess the assumptions and the risks in each of them.
Yep. Have we, I'm sorry, Joe, go ahead, because...
No, I was going to say, I agree with that, but I think that given the way Gary's been running the company, it's not likely it's going to change as long as it's running. I just get the sense that the discussions that we've had have just not persuaded him to do anything different. And from what I get, this has been his business approach his whole life. So we're at a point where they are at least thinking about succession planning. And I just wonder if the next generation is really not that you can do one or the other, but that looking at a really robust succession planning focus might help change the thinking. Because the next generation is not likely to necessarily follow what Gary's been doing.
They're not even prepared.
What's that?
They're not even
prepared.
But
I'd still go back to what the problem
is. Not prepared.
Well, they may not be prepared. We don't know how old they are.
They're all in their 20s, early 30s.
Yeah, but I still go back to what is the problem we're going to solve? Because now we're in a succession plan. If we don't know what the problem is, how do we know what we're looking for in terms of succession? What are the needs? So we need to address that, no doubt. But I think we still need to focus on what's the core challenge we're looking to solve. And therefore, we'll figure out what succession plan needs and some of the other ancillary things.
So what is the core problem?
There isn't a problem. That's the problem. I mean, if they've been dysfunctional since the beginning and it's been survival of the fittest, that's kind of the tone of the company, the markets continue to cause that company to survive and thrive. So from a financial standpoint, you could argue, you know, single digit versus double digit growth, but from a financial standpoint, there isn't a problem. There will be a problem, but I think it's harder to convince someone of a solution for a problem that they don't see.
We have a bit of a 50-50. So one part of the family believes, in one of our family board members believes that it is a problem, that this isn't a sustainable track record. The other half believes that there is no problem, exactly what you're suggesting. But as independents, for us, I think the question of what is the underlying issue here, because to some extent, whether it's succession or whether it's the issue of growth or no growth, right, those are somewhat symptoms, I believe. So what do you think is the underlying issue here, and how do we as independents help to move them kind of forward, do you think? I mean, how
the ownership, maybe, it's what, 50-50?
50-50. Mm-hmm.
So basically, we can't do anything, because it's Lucy and Ellen, right? Mm-hmm. We're 50-50, mm-hmm. And in fact, it's Lucy, behind it's Gary. So in fact, it's the current acting CEO or president who has 50% of the decision of the board, so he can't really do anything, but he can block everything. So I guess we have to change that. I mean, the ownership has to change, the vote at least.
But they believe, their fundamental belief is that this business is just going to keep going for a long time. We got the 60 million, it throws off nice dividends, it's not going to stop. That's my read of mm-hmm. the situation, is that it's going to continue. Now, part of the family says, maybe not so much, but convincing the other half where their wallets keep are fairly fat. It's like, hey, this is pretty good, right? So, but the assumption is that this is just gonna, the inertia is gonna keep me going. And I think that's a belief, and whether you change, ownership, move somebody out, that might change it, but a lot of them in the family, it sounds like that's their fundamental belief about the business.
That's true.
I don't know what you guys think, but that's my takeaway.
Mike?
Let's do one more quote, and then what I'd like to do is to transfer to Janice and to say, what happened?
What happened? two more, maybe. Go ahead.
Under the current situation, we're where it says Gary and Lucy disagree on how best to develop next-gen leaders, I think we should put forward what our recommendation is for developing these leaders. Second, they disagree on timing of succession planning because Gary's 65. I think we should make a recommendation to him. And third, strategy. Everything that we're talking about with this company needs a real thorough thrashing of strategy. And what are we there for except to advise? That's our job. Mm-hmm. That's all we can do. So that's what I would do with those two things.
Okay.
Let me stop the case.
Can we just take Al's?
At this point,
okay.
Just turn to Janice. Is this case based on something you've actually done?
Yes. So this is a fairly accurate case story. Obviously, changed some and then disclosed that it was not. But so kind of very interesting. And you saw. I'm sorry for the 5-page case, but I wanted you to see some of the family dynamics that had led up to the current ownership. We didn't get into, but I think you know I. Time permitted, this conversation, I'd love to continue it about when you have a 50-50 voting share situation, you know, what that kind of leads to in terms of, candidly, a bit of a stalemate in the organization. So thank you for the conversation. So this client, we did many of the things that we were discussing here. Everything started with a very kind of in-depth strategy. Both exercise and process, which they had not gone through previously. It was at the strategy session, candidly, that a lot of these differences in just core values and expectations out of the business began to surface, candidly. We had an industry expert actually in the aerospace sector that was part of our ELI team talking about where the sector was going and where the opportunities lied. And, you know, for those of us who absolutely favor growth, this was kind of like I left the room at times saying, oh, wow, the opportunity that's in front of them. Fast forward, so the idea about how to think through the risks of the business, think through both the growth opportunities. Succession became stalemated. We have a very kind of established process we bring, particularly in family settings, through how to think about succession, because as you know, it's obviously not a flip the switch. So we were very much, Gary started quite engaged in the process, and it wasn't going to happen overnight, but you know, we kind of showed him how this all, the timeline that it takes and why it makes sense to be thinking about it. And although he presented himself in a very kind of positive, you know, I'll be absolutely part of this, the closer we came to actually triggering that, the more he backed up and said, you know what, I'm not sure. I mean, I may not. I told you I was retiring in a couple of years, but I might not. And I don't think we should be thinking about the process. And they have no head of sales. So they've never had any sales leadership in the organization, which is crazy. And so we had even suggested about potentially bringing someone in sales, and ultimately when the timing was right, that potentially they could assume the CEO role. So succession planning, we did try to start that a little bit earlier in the event that that might also help to bring some of these underlying issues to the surface. The next gen ended up being, in the real life case, five sons, three on one side, two in the other. So Gary has two sons, Lucy has three. Four out of the five are in the business. Lucy wanted, and we developed for them, a very, very structured leadership development program. So how do we take very talented young men from where they are to where they needed to be? And there was, in fact, an agreement that it was highly probable that over time one would step into the CEO role, so the business would ultimately retain its family leadership. Gary's sons were much less on board with the development plan, actually refused to participate in the development plan. And those of you familiar with emotional intelligence, we had done, so I had a sense that there was some kind of core underlying behavioral stuff that was going on here. And one of Gary's sons is pretty problematic on the emotional intelligence, both assessment and just behaviorally and a host of things, but refused any type of guidance, whether it was with ELI or anyone else, candidly. So the fire keeps, you know, kind of being, the pot keeps getting getting stirred.
What happened when the sons refused to participate? Was there any repercussion at all?
Well, it came back to the board. And the board, complete board, highly encouraged actually that all of the next gens participate in the program, because the board had already supported moving forward across the across them, and there continued to be a decision by Gary and Lucy that their son was going to be able to opt out. So things escalated, and the independents were unable to really radically change things. And in fact, as I put in the case, there started to be some camps being formed, correct? So, you know, one side of the family was taking folks and trying to get to some of the independents. And one of the independent, in my view, was not all that independent. He's a former accountant for one side of the family. So long story short, the decision was made that perhaps the family should split, and buy one side, buy the other out. Gary was willing because he really decided, you know what, I don't want to stay in this business for another 5 to 10 years, and if I'm not running this business, you know, I don't. I'll take my money and go. So they have. We've helped them through all of this, but they've now, the Lucy's family has purchased the business. Gary is going to serve in the president's capacity through the end of the year, and then will be in a consultative role for them next year as they need it. They're negotiating their contract with their largest client is coming up for renewal, and Gary's been point on that negotiation for 10 years, so he'll be around to help through that. And they're in the search mode for a new CEO. That will really be in an interesting position, correct? Because the next gens are, you know, clearly, you know, Lucy has had in her mind that one of her sons would in fact take over as CEO. And the good news is, with the right development, which they're getting, that they'll be able to achieve that. So a little bit of a mixed ending, I think, in some ways, but. From our perspective, the views of the families were so radically different in terms of their core values and desires from the business long term that this probably, in our opinion, really was the best solution. And it also candidly has retained the family relationship. So, you know, that did not, as we know in many of these situations, can become incredibly splintered. They were able to, you know, negotiations are always hard, right? So as they were going through the closing, as we all know, there were some tense moments between the two sides. But now that it's a done deal, you know, they play golf, they have dinners, they're, you know, they're doing okay. So yeah, so that's
like
good.
A good result.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah.
I
yeah.
don't know how it would be.
As you said, with the 50-50 starting point, if there's not alignment, that's just a recipe for trouble, right there.
Yeah. Yeah, and that is a struggle. I mean, it's because there's really, and the, you know, of course, the issue with the son having had the heavier percentage, it turned out being to be his wife, the daughter-in-law, you know, added a little fuel to the fire, but it was non-voting. So they had the added economic benefit, but again, and that 50-50 came up time and time again. Creating the board was a major, major issue. That took a very extended period of time because they couldn't come to agreement on how the board would be constructed, what the criteria, and just dragged on. So, is it okay if I ask a question? have you all helped or been through it yourself where there's been the 50-50 kind of ownership, and how would you, how have you addressed that issue or helped clients or your own companies through that? Has anyone had to deal with that?
I have a family business that I'm working with. Very similar to this in terms of some members of the family really want a lifestyle business and we don't need to grow, let's just really take care of the customers. The others are saying, let's just grow so we can sell this business and get out of it. And thankfully, there's the mother that's the uniter in the family. And they have really stepped up to the plate. What they've said is that we, as brothers and sisters, can't agree. And we will never agree. And not only that, they don't like each other. And so they've created a new board of directors with three truly independent outsiders. They have no relationship to the family. They're all impressive in their own right. And then one brother and one sister, but really the power is now with the outside directors, and it's going to be the non-family people that will determine the where the direction of the company.
Family?
The outside directors will.
Yeah, who actually votes the board?
Ownership split.
Do the family members still have that right to vote the board members in and out?
The way it is currently structured is the board will always have three outside board members out of five. And so it'll always be an outside dominated board of directors.
But the owners, the family, control is the wrong word, but the family can at any time say, you're out, right? I mean, that's a little bit of what this was beginning to come down to, was because of the 50-50, that's why you saw the maneuvering around, come to dinner with me, you know, this week, and then I'm going. They were building alliances because at the end of the day, they were ultimately had the, or at least could have started the conversations around Xing. So I think it's just a very, very hard. And you see it very often in family businesses where often the founder or early generations will say, well, we think this is fair. So if I have, you know, two children, then I'm going to leave them a 50% stake. So lots of discussions with our clients around, you know, what does fair mean and how does one think about that and what does this kind of a situation lead to. I think if it's okay, I'll take a minute. Let me tell you a little bit about some of what we do in our other client situations. I'm happy, this is one of many. I mean, these are, I think, fairly fascinating situations because they really do get to the core of human nature. So Larry, thank you. Larry kind of introduced myself and my team, but we really do focus on helping businesses through these critical inflection points. So we're being brought in during periods of high growth where there's a need to improve performance, and that doesn't mean that this is a restructuring or a company that's off the tracks. It's just that they want to do better than where they are today. And then we're involved in ownership and leadership transitions, and that can be a transition to a third party, so whether that's a private equity or whether that's a spin-off, a part of the business, or it's next generation, or it's first time, non-family, if it's a family situation, CEO. We work with clients in any way that makes sense for them. So sometimes our work is advisory. So we may be working with a client, but you would never see us on site, or, you know, like teasingly we'll say we're a little bit behind the curtain. So we may be working directly with the board or with the CEO or other C-suite execs. Or we're in a project, so we're brought in to, for example, we're going to engage in an M&A transaction, and so we need some help to actually do the integration for us. And so that's a project that has a definitive kind of start and end with a set of deliverables. In other cases, we'll take a role with the client, whether on an interim basis or part-time or even full-time. One of my partners is involved today, can't name names, but he's kind of the lead financial officer for a major client here in the Boston area that's going through a sales transaction. So he's been with them getting ready for the transaction. Now he'll take them through its completion. And that's been a literally full-time plus engagement for him. So very much depends. My team are all operating executives. We're not career consultants. So we are all former chief executive officers, chief financial officers, chief operating officers, chief human capital officers. So we represent the entire executive suite within the firm. So depending upon our clients' needs, they are, particularly in the family closely held space, usually a combination of, it may be strategy, it may be finance, it may be, it always is, by the way, and it's not because this is my specialty, it's always on the people side as well. So there's always the human capital element that helps drive. So that's a little bit about us. We're doing everything from doing business assessments and full kind of assessments of a business that the founder unexpectedly passed, before the next generation was able to come in, had to figure out, you know, where are we, was kind of the starting point. So that was a full assessment. We're serving as an interim executive for an alternative energy company that has really needs to re-examine its kind of organizational structure to help it get through growth. We have a client in the food distribution business that has the opportunity to expand globally and is looking at how best to expand their manufacturing and distribution capabilities. So pretty diverse client base, and we work with NextGens, which is just so much fun.
What size?
You know, clients range from really kind of some of our life science med device companies are pre-revenue, but generally our clients are under $500 million in revenue, so it's a very large range. I'd say the majority of our clients are in the $25 to $250 million space, so small, what would be called small mid-market organizations. Yep.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. It was fun.
Our next case is going to be with Ellen Ridstone, and it's really going to be about what do board members need to know, not just audit members need to know. And we usually meet the last Thursday of every month, but the last Thursday of October is Halloween. We've decided not to compete with Halloween, so we will meet.
Thank you.
Good idea.
We'll meet the third Thursday. You'll be getting a notice about that. Thank you very much for attending. Please feel free to continue to stay at Schmooze. There's some food, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much. A pleasure. Nice meeting you all.